Pushing my hair from my face, he confessed. You are already the first that I chose. I blinked as the realization of what he was saying sank in. I was your first? Ever? I questioned in disbelief. This male was formidable. Maya had told me that the champions were gifted with Monobi. 901 had been a champion for a very long time. You are the champion. Master must have gifted you with Monobi often. He looked away.
Yes, but I never took them. I had the guard take them away.
A sudden rush of disappointment and guilt panged in my stomach. I shifted back, gaining some space. 901 stopped me by wrapping a large muscled arm around my waist.
What? He pushed, concern written on his face. Do you not think me a worthy male, knowing you are my first?
I shook my head, emotion welling in my chest.
No, that's not it, I whispered.
901 searched my face.
Then what?
That night, I divulged, thinking back to being thrown in this cell.
You didn't want me. You called for the guard to take me away, but Master had ordered that I stay. When the drugs flooded my veins, the other champions told you to take me.
I shut my eyes in humiliation. When I opened them again, I hushed out.
You were forced to take me.
I took your choice away. A tear slipped down my cheek, but then 901 was above me, his hands jailing mine at my sides.
Stop, he snapped, and I saw the famed pitbull shining through.
I relaxed, knowing he wouldn't hurt me. 901 lowered his head and said,
From the first time I saw you on Master's arm, I wanted you. I have never looked at a female the way I looked at you. And I have never wanted a female like I want you. But the drugs made you react to me. You had no choice. I had a choice, he argued.
Then, with a surprising tenderness, he pressed three light kisses along my neck. When he raised his head, he said,
I chose to take you. I chose to hold you close.
He inhaled.
I chose to make you mine.
My skin broke out in shivers at his words. 901 released my hands and I wrapped them around his neck. His hard chest brushed against my own and I said,
I wish I knew your name. I want so much to know the name of the male who has brought me home to his heart. Krasivia,
he murmured, his voice thick with need. 901 crushed his mouth to mine. Unlike the previous kisses, there was nothing possessive about this. 901's lips covered mine with a gentle, yet consuming intensity. I moaned in surprise when I felt his tongue pushing into my mouth. I tensed at first, unsure what to do, but when my tongue brushed against his, it troubled me no more. 901's heavy body smothered mine, and my hands slipped from his neck and down along the breadth of his back. 901 groaned low, the sound traveling straight to my core. I gasped at the feel of him above me, needing this as much as I did. 901 moved his head back, and staring in my eyes, he slipped his hand down between us, his fingers reaching between my legs. I cried out, holding onto his shoulders when his fingers drifted along my core. My back arched and my skin scalded with heat. But this time there were no drugs causing me to need this moment. This was me, and this was him. This was us choosing to act for ourselves, taking this pleasure because we wanted each other freely. In a world of iron cages and bars, we were taking something of our own. 901's warm breath ghosted across my face. He was breathing hard, not so different from me. I cried out when a teasing burst of pleasure arrived due to his gentle touch. 901 stilled and looked down at me. I could see the concern on his face.
Is this okay?
He asked, his hardness pressing against my thigh.
Yes, I replied breathlessly. More. Touch me some more.
I felt my face heat at my brazen words, but when 901 growled low and began moving his fingers again, I was lost to his touch. 901 teased and he played, and when his fingers slowly entered my channel, I broke apart on a loud shout, blistering light and pure pleasure splintering me apart. 901 pulled his hand away, and just as he did, I opened my eyes. His handsome face was stern and anxious as he watched for my reaction. When I eventually smiled, he exhaled a relieved breath and covered my body again. Showing him what I wanted, what I was choosing, I wrapped my legs around his hips and reached down to take his length in my hand. He hissed out in pleasure and gritted his teeth as my fingers wrapped around him. As I guided him to my channel, he paused to drop the sweetest soft kiss on my forehead before pushing forward and filling me to the hilt. 901's head snapped back and a low groan slipped from his tensed lips. My eyes rolled back as he sat within me so perfectly. Before moving again, 901 hooked his thick arms under my shoulders and slowly began to rock. With every movement, I felt the darkness in my soul lift, and with every kiss on my face from his soft mouth, my heart beat louder and louder.
«Мой прекрасный», he whispered as his breathing increased in speed.
«Мой воин», I whispered back. We didn't have names. Our numbers weren't welcome in this moment. Right now, I was his beautiful, and he was my brave warrior. 901's thrusts grew faster and faster as the minutes passed by. I moaned loud when the tingles spread on my thighs. 901's length twitched within me, and I knew we were both getting close. 901's arms kept me close to his chest, and just before my body filled with the brightest of light, he brought his mouth to take mine, swallowing my cries. My body arched as 901 roared out his release. His head drew back as his neck corded from the strain. His wounded body was flushed and damp. It was perfect. This moment was perfect, as was he. The billowed warm air from the shower's heat was sticking to our skin. It bumped when a cold draft from the cell door circled around us. 901's head fell onto my shoulder. I stroked at his back, feeling a strange lightness in my heart. Just as I tried to think what this sensation was, 901 lifted his head.
I feel different.
He pulled his arm from under mine. He placed his hand over his chest and said,
In my heart, it feels different. Changed.
My stomach flipped, knowing he was feeling this too. Taking in a much-needed breath, I asked,
Does it feel light? Like at any moment it might combust?
901 nodded his head, his understanding expression telling me I had described it completely correct.
What is it?
He asked, lines of confusion creasing on his forehead. Following what my heart was telling me to say, I replied,
I think it means we have found a peace within each other's arms. I think it means...
I trailed off, unsure if it was the right word to use.
What?
He pushed. Tell me. Combing my hand through his hair, just so I could touch him once more, I nervously said,
Happy?
I lost my breath when 901 stilled. Finding the last of my courage, I added,
I think it means we are happy.
901 froze. Then, with watery eyes, he repeated,
Happy. Together we make happiness.
I smiled. I smiled freely and uncaged. And when 901 moved beside me and wrapped me in his strong arms, I fell asleep with my hand over his chest, with the heady feeling of this newfound happiness in my heart.
11. Luca. Undisclosed location. Georgia. Eastern Europe. My leg bounced as the plane began its descent. Victor was at the front of the plane getting the documents in order. Abel, his contact, had come through for him. Zal and Valentine sat opposite me. Zal was the picture of calm as he sat stoically in his seat. Valentine was the complete opposite. His eyes were wild, and his body twitched like he was still on the drugs they'd pumped into our bodies for so many years. Over the past few weeks, Valentine had thrown himself into the practice of death match fighting. His focus was solely on using his rage to his advantage. As he had promised, his skill with the unpowered Pecanas was astounding. His strength and ability to kill with efficiency were no less than Zal's and mine, but the best part of Valentine's arsenal was his unwavering belief and drive to get his sister back. That desire would override any lack of training he might have in combat. As an Ubitsa, his ability to kill was unrivaled. He would be fine. Seeing the land of Georgia coming into view from Kirill's private plane, I leaned forward, Valentine and Zal meeting my eyes. Placing my hand on the table between us, I asked, "You're sure you're clear with the plan?" Zal nodded, and Valentine spat out, "Yes." Needing to make sure, I said, "Victor is the manager of a New York gulag, not the Volkovs. Abel has already approved us without question. So, to Master, we are simply another underground fight ring. Nothing of importance." Zal and Valentine listened hard. "I am the ultimate champion, retrieved from escape." A rush of sadness spread in my chest. I was using what had happened to Henri in my story. It was plausible. Clearing my throat, I pointed at Zal. "You were bought from the Volkov Russians. You were too feral and untamed. Victor bought you to fight in his gulag." Zal nodded. I next pointed to Valentine. "After your collar malfunctioned, you killed Mistress and her wraiths. You have no memory of this. One of the wraiths survived and knew of Victor's gulag. He sold you and fled the U.S. Valentine's lip curled in disgust, but he nodded. Keeping his attention, I said, "We've talked through this 1,000 times, but if and when you see your sister, you mustn't react. Hold yourself together until the opportunity to strike arrives. If she is still alive after all this time, she will survive for a further few days." "Then the master is mine," he growled, and I nodded in agreement. "Then he is yours. But for that to happen, you must stick to the plan. If one of us fucks up and reveals who we truly are, they will kill us on the spot." A sudden flash of fear passed over Valentine's face. "I can't leave my Zoya," he said, an almost gentle edge to his harsh-sounding voice. It was strange hearing such sentiment from such a brutal male. Zal lifted his hand and put it on Valentine's shoulder. A peace had settled between them over the past few weeks. Zal had seen himself as Valentine trained in the cage. He was fighting for his sister's return, just as Zal had fought so hard for his. "We won't fuck up. We will destroy this place, then return home to our females." Valentine's wide shoulders relaxed. Kiza's tearful face entered my head, her goodbye to me this morning. Zal, Talia, Valentine, and Zoya had arrived at my father's house to leave for the airfield. From the night I told Kiza what I was to do, she had said nothing in response. She knew I had to do this. It didn't mean I couldn't see the terror and concern every time she looked at me over the past few weeks. She held my hand longer. She kissed me softer. And she made love to me every chance she got. I glanced down at my hand, and I could still feel her kiss on my palm as I said goodbye to her this morning. Talia and Zoya had proved themselves to be just as strong as my wife. They had supported their males. If this all went according to plan, after this battle, there would be no more war to fight. Blinking away the memory and emotion on Kiza's face, I looked to my brothers and said, "We will win. There is no other choice." "And the fourth warrior in the champion round?" Zal questioned. "He gets on board, or we take him out first. Whatever we have to do." My hands clenched into fists on the table, and the old surge of adrenaline flooded my veins. "We will kill many. That includes fighters that are too far gone, or any that stand in our way. We do not give second chances. We do not hesitate to strike those that try to stop us. We kill quickly. We kill without mercy." Zal and Valentine nodded. I sat back in my seat as the plane descended. "How far is the pit from the airfield?" I asked Valentine.
"No more than 20 minutes, Valentine replied. "The airfield is Arziani's. Wraiths will guide our van to the loading door."
Nodding, I reached for the hem of my sweater and pulled it over my head. When my bare torso was on display, I retrieved my worn but trusted knuckle dusters from my bag. I stared at the metal, felt the bladed tips with my finger to make sure they were sharp. When a bud of blood formed on my finger, I felt the excitement of being back in this place spark inside me. The old rage stirring inside, waking from the sleep I had kept him in for months. With a deep breath, I slipped the knuckle dusters in place. I bent my fingers, feeling the weight of them once again in my hands. When I looked up, I saw Zal had followed my lead. He looked every inch a Gulag fighter, bare-chested and wearing only the standard black pants. And in his hands were his black size. From this vantage point, as Zal's eyes remained cast down to stare at his weapons, I felt like I was here with Henri once again. I fought a smirk at how my best friend would have relished in this moment. He would have stormed into this fight like a hurricane of rage, taking Master and his wraiths out with a smile on his face. When Zal looked up at me, he asked, "You think of my brother?" My chest tightened, but I replied truthfully, "Yes." Zal nodded sadly. I knew it still bothered him that his memories were almost gone of his twin. Only fragments of their childhood remained. "This is the moment he wished for," I said, thinking of our parting in Alaska. "He was coming back to find you and destroy this place. He didn't quite remember, but he knew his heart was being called here." Zal's green eyes brightened. "I was just thinking of how he would have rejoiced in this moment, finally getting to meet the male that created this hell, getting to return to the slave factory where you were experimented on like rats." I huffed a laugh. He would have burned it to the ground with a laugh bursting from his chest. Zal didn't say anything in response. "And we will. In his memory, we will do as he would." My eyes darted to Valentine, who was sitting bare-chested with his sharp picanas in his hand. Zal looked to his new brother. Valentine looked to him. "Every move we make in this pit will be in Henri's honor. We will attack and survive as he would. Then we will burn it to the ground, just as he would." Several long seconds passed before Zal nodded. "Yes," he agreed in a husky voice. "We will do this for Henri." Zal's eyes drifted to look out the window as the ground approached. When Valentine looked to me, I nodded my head in thanks. Hope sprouted in my heart at Valentine's unexpected words. He was sitting stoic, like I had told him to be. His moods were unpredictable and his rage uncontained.
but here, seated before me, was a male that met the story Victor would tell, a savage male captured and made into a brutal killer. I knew the male underneath, the one seething with rage, the one willing to risk anything for his sister. The plane bumped as we landed. Victor looked back from his seat at the front. Four of Zal's males had been brought along. They would play the part of Victor's Georgian gulag's guards. When the plane drew to a stop, several cars and vans stopped beside us. Wraiths. Valentin growled low in his throat when males dressed all in black left the cars. Flicking my wrist, I gestured for Zal and Valentin to take their places. Three of Zal's males came toward us and attached rope around our necks. My muscles tensed at being back in this position. The male that was holding my rope sent me an apologetic look. It helped calm the flames sparking in my chest. When I glanced to Zal, he was calm and quiet. Valentin, at having something back around his neck, wasn't faring so well, but he held it together. The sound of the plane door opening cut through the cabin, and my heart slammed against my chest. Victor disappeared down the steps. We were all quiet in this place as we listened to Victor discussing his cargo with the wraiths. 10 minutes later, Victor shouted for us to disembark. Zal's bikey led us forward by our rope collars. I went first, Zal following behind. Valentin was at the rear. The night was black. As I was led down the steps, I glanced up through a fallen strand of hair and saw miles and miles of what appeared to be barren wasteland. The perfect disguise, I thought, knowing that beneath the ground was a slave city. The wraiths were gathered in a perfect formation. Their guns were loaded and aimed at us, just in case we charged. They stared at me as I stopped to stand next to Victor. A few of them murmured in quiet whispers when Zal stopped too, but their reaction to Valentin trudging down the steps was clear to anyone with eyes. The guards tensed and stared at the monstrous scarred male as he descended to the tarmac. The wraiths in charge stared at Valentin in shock. Moving closer to Victor, he said, "So you weren't lying. You truly have 194 in your gulag." Victor nodded, a fake, prideful smile on his face. He too was acting the part of the perfect gulag owner. "We do. And he is one of the best fighters I have ever seen. He will give your champions a challenge like no other." He pointed to us all when Valentin came to stand by our sides. "They all will." I could see by the wraith's expression that he believed Victor. I could also see that he was impressed by us. Relief settled in my bones. If the wraiths thought us strong and viable males in comparison to their own, then we had a chance for our plan to work. The head wraith pointed to the van. "Load them in there," he said to our bikey. Zal's males did as ordered and placed us in the back of the van. We were all silent as we were plunged into darkness. I knew it was Valentin who sat beside me. The male's body was pulsing with aggression. "Calm," I whispered in Russian. "Wraiths," he snarled low and almost unheard. "Calm," I repeated, just as the van began to move. Valentin took long, deep breaths. The tension thickened the farther we drove, until we came to a stop. In seconds, the back doors were opened, and our bikey reached for our roped necks. When we got out of the van, I took in what was before us. We were standing in the center of a large compound, enclosed by high, dark fences. There was barbed wire covering the tops. Two large watchtowers were in sight, but I couldn't see the others. The walls stretched too far. Each tower was manned by at least 3 guards. When the other cars stopped beside us, I saw Zal and Valentin scanning the perimeter. They were recording all this for future use, but other than the walls and the towers, there was nothing. Nothing but a steep set of steps descending into the earth. No buildings, no life, just barren land and these stairs. The head wraith jumped from a blacked-out jeep, followed by several of his males. He indicated for us to follow and began walking down the steps. Our bikey guided us down, Victor walking out in front. The steps were many. Then at least we came to a large set of steel doors. The head wraith banged on the metal. The heavy doors creaked open, revealing a dank, wide tunnel beyond. After we entered the tunnel, the doors slammed behind us. The wraith's heavy boots echoed off the stone floor. We walked for what felt like miles, until we arrived at another large set of doors. Beyond these doors were more steps, followed by many hallways. The head wraith paused just before leading us down the left tunnel.
"You have been privileged, Victor," he said proudly. "Master wants to see you and your fighters."
His gaze then fixed on Valentin, and ice filled my muscles.
"He wants to meet the monster that slayed his sister."
Valentin tensed beside me. But Victor played into the role.
"I'd be honored,"
he replied, and the head wraith smiled.
"Come,"
the head wraith ordered. We followed him down the narrow hallway. With every step, my mind raced with what we would do if Master wanted to punish Valentin. I prayed that Valentin wouldn't react first when coming eye to eye with the male that had called his sister back to his pit. The male that had become master to his sister. The male that was using her for sex. The hallways were winding and long, but eventually we entered a large hall, the size of it surprising. A table stood at the end of the space, and around it were 3 males. I immediately sought out Arziani. He carried himself like many of the crime bosses in New York did, arrogantly, like he was the most powerful male in the world. I supposed here, in this underground town, he was. His expensive shoes tapped on the floor as he approached us, his 2 guards following closely behind. I stood between Zal and Valentin. I almost choked on the hate pulsing from their bodies. Master stopped before us, and I got a good look at his face. I hadn't been sure what to expect, but he was nothing special. It was the glint he had in his eyes that betrayed the true nature of his black soul. The glint that showed his ruthlessness was underneath. The male that took enjoyment from others' pain. Arziani's eyebrows rose as he roved his excited gaze over us all. His lip hooked into the briefest smile when he saw Zal. He stepped closer to Zal and lifted his hand to trace his tattoo. 221. Zal's teeth ground together as Master's fingers dropped down to his torso. When he looked back into Zal's eyes, he said,
"One of the Kostova twins. We had long imagined you dead."
Arziani looked to Victor.
"The Volkovs gave him to you."
Victor nodded.
"Yes, Master. They wanted to use him to kill for them, but he was unsalvageable. Too far gone in the head."
Arziani stared back at Zal.
"He appears docile enough now." "It's the drugs, Master. We bought the type A from you. We use it to keep him obedient."
Arziani nodded his head, then looked to me.
"And him?" "Our Gulag's ultimate champion. A Russian, known as Reyes, the previous Alaskan champion. We bought him after he was found by a smaller Georgian organization that knew of our gulag in New York.
Is he good?
Unrivaled.
Arziani smiled and said,
Good. My champion is a Russian, too. Taken as a child from an orphanage, and raised to be exactly the kind of killer I dreamed about.
His face then flashed with annoyance.
Though he has lost my favor of late.
He stepped back, eyes bright.
This 818 seems he could perhaps give him a challenge. I will look forward to seeing it.
Master then moved to Valentin, and he lost his humor. Valentin stared straight ahead, frozen to the spot. Master lifted his hand and brushed his fingertip over the scar on Valentin's neck. But he didn't stop there. He moved to his scarred face and traced the lashes that Valentin's mistress had meted out for his disobedience, permanently disfiguring his face. Master stepped back and regarded Valentin coldly.
So this is the mutant that slaughtered my sister.
Silence. The air pulsed with electricity as we waited for what would come next. I could feel our bikey loosening their holds on our ropes. They expected a fight.
So did I.
But when Arziani's lips spread into a wide grin and a booming laugh came from his mouth, that expectation fell away. Arziani slapped Valentin on the shoulder.
That woman was the bane of my life. You did me a favor killing her.
He looked to Zal.
And her asshole of a lover, the one you killed, you did me a favor. Jackoa had thought himself higher than his station. I had already issued his death warrant. You just beat me to it.
I waited as Arziani's eyes fell back to Valentin. I waited for him to mention his sister. I waited for him to taunt him with the fact that he had her under his control and in his bed. But Arziani didn't say a thing. I wondered why. Then thought that maybe he didn't know. Maybe he didn't know Inessa was Valentin's blood. Maybe his sister had never told him. Arziani looked to Victor.
Your gulag must be strong. You are the last fighters to arrive, and none have males to rival yours. After the tournament, we should talk, he smiled. We Georgians need to keep our business close to home, no?
Of course, master, Victor replied. Relief trickled down my spine.
We have quarters for you and your fighters. The tournament begins tomorrow. You will receive good fights. I'm interested how your males will stand up to my champions. But maybe they are matches for the later rounds. If they make it to the final rounds, they will be awarded the champions' quarters, and you will be given better accommodations too. We honor our victors here in the blood pit.
Thank you, Victor said. Arziani flicked his wrist in dismissal. The head wraith led us out of the hall and down the hallway. With every step, my blood pumped faster and faster around my body. This could actually work, I thought to myself. We walked through three long hallways, then arrived at a section filled with several large rooms. When I looked through the open doorways, fighters of all nationalities sat inside. They glared as we passed, holding their weapons or sitting drugged on the floor. We arrived at an empty room, its walls and floors made of dark stone. Several beds lay on the floor, with a side room at the back that was probably for washing. The head wraith pointed for us to enter. Victor hung back and was told,
Your food will be brought to you. You don't leave these quarters until training. The fighters will be taken to the training pits and will be there all day. If they win, monas will be provided for relief.
Valentin growled beside me at the news. Zal discreetly put his hand on his arm to shut him up. He did, but his body shook as he held back his need to kill.
No, Monebi, Victor said. They don't get females in our gulag.
The head wraith's eyes narrowed. Then he shrugged his shoulders.
Your choice?
He stepped away and continued.
You'll be told of your scheduled fight soon. There will be a viewing cage for your fighters to watch the other matches. We find that the fighters who watch the other men perform better when they enter the pit. The bloodlust makes for a more interesting battle.
Victor nodded, and the head wraith walked away. Victor hovered near the door until the coast was clear. The bikie released our ropes, but we stayed sitting against the wall of the room, just in case we were being watched. Victor sat opposite. Not looking at me, he said,
I have never seen anything like this place. Who would ever believe something like this existed?
Me? The three of us replied in unison. Victor's head turned to face us, and he nodded sadly. He sighed and said,
We should all get some sleep. We have to be focused tomorrow in case you are announced as a first match.
Agreed, I said quietly. Before we all moved to our beds, I said,
No matter what happens in these few days, even if one of us falls, we carry on. We bring this place down.
Agreed, Zal and Valentin said in unison. I moved to a bed without another word, slipping off my dusters and laying them at my side. The sound of fighters practicing echoed off the walls. A constant dripping from a leaky pipe splashed repeatedly on the floor. Hearing Zal and Valentin moving to the beds near me, an image of Kiza's beautiful face filled my head. I wondered if Zal and Valentin were thinking of their females too. Because if they were fighting to return home with everything they had, we couldn't possibly lose. We had been thrust back into hell. But this time, the only way out was to burn it in our wake. And we had only limited days to see it through.
12. 901. Everything about today felt different. I had woken with 152 in my arms, like every other day. But today wasn't like every other day. We had changed. Things between 152 and me had changed. I was changed. I had taken her every night for weeks because she'd needed me for the drugs. Last night, I had taken her because she wanted me to. The most beautiful Mona in the pit had wanted me. She had been taken to her quarters by the guard this morning, but before she left, she had pulled me out of view and given me a slow kiss on my lips. Even now, I could taste her on my mouth. A guard came to the door and I stepped out. I walked to the hallway and, like every day, received my drugs. There was only me in line, then 667, and 140 fell in behind me.
First day of tournament, 667 said. The rest of the fighters are being moved to another part of the pit. The training pits are just for the champions and tournament fighters.
The cheery injected me, and I walked forward toward the pits. I held my kinjals in my hands. Noises of males training hit my ears. When I entered through the open doorway, I roved my eyes around the mass of movement. 667 and 140 arrived behind me, and I knew they were looking too. Males of all sizes were sparring with their trainers. Every kind of weapon was being used. Swords, daggers, chains, axes, hammers, scythes, spears, knuckle dusters. I watched a few of the males in action. None seemed threatening. I moved to my usual pit, 667 and 140 jumping into theirs beside me. Only three other males were in this section with me. Three males that, when I watched them train, instantly pulled my attention. One was darker in skin with long black hair. I stared at another, and my eyes widened. He was huge, tall with broad shoulders. He had severely scarred skin, the most severe lash scars on his face. But around his neck was the red remnant, evidence he had once worn a collar. His hair was black, and in his hands he held two unpowered pikanas, similar to what some of the guards held. When he turned his head, snarling in his sparring, I got a clear view of his face. His eyes were blue. A third male suddenly slapped him on his back. My attention then went to him. He had blonde hair and brown eyes. He was broad and tall. He didn't look as severe as the other two males, yet there was something in the way he stood that made me think he would be the most threatening of them all. He had a calmness that betrayed his comfort at being inside a pit. The way he led the other two males he trained with told me he was used to taking control. Attributes like this always made the hardest warriors, the ones that could effectively stop the beating of your heart when you least expected it. As if feeling my stare, the male turned around. His dark eyes watched me, and they narrowed. I watched him clench his fists. He wore bladed knuckle dusters as his weapon of choice. I had fought many with them on before. They could be just as deadly as daggers if you knew how to wield them correctly. "Our biggest competition," 667 said, arms folded across his chest. 140 flanked my other side.
"They wouldn't have been given this space if Master hadn't found them worthy."
"He is right. They are worthy. They move better than any other fighter in this pit. They are seasoned and effective." 818, the male that looked to be in charge, was suddenly joined by the other two, 221 and 194. The three of them stared at us. We three stared back. I tried to show I was unaffected, but my eyes kept drifting to the heavy, scarred male. Not because he caused me fear or worry, but because of his eyes. His eyes were too similar, too familiar. The same color as 152's. I turned away. I had to get her from my mind. She had no place in this pit. She would be a distraction, one I couldn't afford to have. A short male came toward the three fighters and pulled them away. My trainer arrived. And as was routine, I followed him to the pit. We began slowly, warming up my muscles. Before long, I was in the zone, smashing my kinjals against my trainer's shield. Hours passed, and my body dripped with sweat. Movement caught my eye from the walkway that circled the training pit. My heart slammed against my chest when I looked up and saw 152 approaching. My blood instantly boiled when I saw her being paraded on Master's arm. Her face was blank. She stared straight ahead. Master was holding her close, a smug smile on his fucking face. I growled low and used my anger to strike out at my trainer. I smashed my blades with rapid force. I heard 140 snarl. He turned to see Master watching us train. His eyes casually left his three champions and landed on the three new fighters under the control of the short Georgian. Seeing he was distracted, I used this moment to look to 152. I expected her to be looking back, stealing a glance, but instead she stared at the three new fighters. A strange expression crossed over her face, one I couldn't read. Her cheeks had drained of color. When I followed the path of what held her attention, it was to arrive on the scarred male. He was training hard, his huge body attacking the trainer's pads with perfect form. He was relentless as his powerful strikes almost knocked the trainer from his feet. He turned in the pit, his position now directly facing Master. His eyes were still focused on the task, but when the trainer called for him to halt, 194 glanced up and his gaze collided with 152's, and it never left her. Possessive shivers broke out along my skin when I looked to 152 and saw that she was trapped in his stare. Master watched the other two males sparring with an excited glint in his eyes. He hadn't noticed the scarred male watching his Mona, watching what was mine. 152's eyes were narrowed, the same action she made when confused. When I looked to 194, a strange expression set on his face. My hands shook against my kinjals, jealousy ripping through me like a fever. My feet braced to move. I looked to 152 once more, and this time saw Master following her gaze. His jaw clenched when he saw that her attention wasn't solely on him. Turning on his heel, Master flicked his wrist to the guard. The guard stepped forward. "Move," he commanded, and pointed to the center pit. 152, still caught up in 194's stare, was dragged to follow him. I moved to get him to remove his hands when 667 gripped my arm. I spun around, ready to attack, when 140 stepped in between us. "He was saving you from fucking up and putting your female into danger. You go after Master in this pit and you'll find yourself waking up in hell." My muscles tensed, knowing he was right. They watched me, ready to stop me again, when I reluctantly nodded. 140 slapped me on the shoulder, and we moved to the center pit. The three other males followed, standing slightly behind us. The other competitors gathered too, but I had no time to take notice of them. 194 had all my attention now, the fresh meat that had his eyes on my female. The sound of Master climbing to his podium made me look up. When I did, he took his place, towering above us all. But this time he brought 152 with him. Her head remained lowered as Master paraded her in a dark red dress in front of his males. She stood to his left, timid and meek. My heart swelled on seeing her looking so beautiful. I focused on her face and saw that her bruises and cuts had been covered with makeup. That angered me. Master had hurt her, then disguised it.
"Warriors!"
Master shouted, and held out his arms with a smile on his face.
"Welcome to the blood pit."
Males around me rocked from side to side as they stared up at Master, fueled by his words. Master dropped his arms.
"As you know, the tournament begins tonight. If you are to fight first, you will have already been told by your trainer."
Master paused for effect, then said,
"It is a 4-day-long battle. You win, you will progress to the next round. If you don't..."
Master trailed off and shrugged. The males muttered and growled around me, bloodthirsty for the kill. Master drank it in, getting high from the tension in the room.
"You will be paired for all fights but the final. 4 males will reach the end stage of the championship and will battle it out in a winner-takes-all war."
Nodding, he added,
"Then the male that wins, that slaughters the 3 left in his path, wins the ultimate prize."
Master walked farther forward, peering down, and said slowly, "He wins his freedom." Louder voices cut through the pit this time, males pushed to their limits. They wanted freedom. As I cast my eyes over the tens of males, I could see that this chance to be freed from their chains was everything. This tournament was their chance to become more than they were. Killers. Animals bred for slaughter. Master's gaze then landed on his three champions and the males that had been beside us in the pits.
Tomorrow will be your turn. The champions with the lowest odds will take to the arena.
My blood's temperature spiked at the thought of taking on any one of them. Master then looked to another six males at the opposite side of the center pit. He pointed to them and declared,
"And you will be their opponents."
My lips rolled back over my teeth in frustration. I glanced to the side to glare at the scarred champion, only to find him staring up at the podium. I knew what I would find when I followed the path. I was right. It was 152 that held his attention. When I saw a possessiveness flash across his face, my stomach cramped with the need to rid him of his head. But when 152 lifted her head and stared back at the male, an equal interest in her eyes, I felt my anger overrun my resistance. Why the fuck was she staring at him? Why was he staring at her? I didn't hear Master dismiss us. My blood was too loud in my eyes as it rushed like torrents in my ears. I didn't notice the fighters returning to their pits. All I could see was a red haze, the need to stake my claim on 152. Storming forward, my shoulder crashed against 194's. The large male growled low at the contact and whipped to face me. Before he could react, I threw my kinjals to the ground, seeing him doing the same with his bakanas. I charged. I ran to where he stood and plowed my fist across his jaw. His head snapped back like I hadn't even made a mark. In seconds, he had hit me too, his crazed blue eyes boring into mine. Slamming my chest into his, I warned, "Keep the fuck away from her. Don't you dare look at her again." He pushed against my chest. "Get back. She's mine," I hissed, and struck out again. I smashed my fist into his lip, immediately drawing blood. He lifted his hand to his lip, and his already fucked up face contorted with rage. His muscles tensed until they shook with the effort. But just as I braced for him to strike, a firm hand landed on my chest and pushed me. I stumbled back, before righting myself. The blonde champion in his party was pushing the scarred one away. The scarred fighter tried to push past him to get at me.
"Retreat," the blonde male ordered 194.
I was surprised when I heard them speaking in Russian.
"I'm going to kill him," 194 snarled, and glared at me over the blonde shoulders. "He called her his. He fucking called her his."
At his words, I rushed forward just as the one with long black hair wrenched the scarred Russian out of my path. Instead, the blonde leader turned on me and swung. His heavy fist collided with my cheek. I swung back, striking him in return, blood dripping from his mouth, and he smiled. Blood coated his white teeth as I tasted blood on my tongue.
"He doesn't look at her," I ordered in Russian.
The blonde blinked, then stepped closer.
"He does whatever the fuck he wants," he answered back. "She's mine," I shouted, and took the fucker to the ground. I struck and struck any chance I got.
He fought back. Rage took its hold when this male didn't break under my fist. He gave as good as he got, slamming his blows into my ribs and stomach, matching my every move. I panted as the Russian champion didn't submit. He sweated when I didn't give. But my drive kept strong. When my eyes met his, I could see he was livid. I rolled him on his back and plowed my head against his,
but as soon as our heads collided, he flipped me onto my back and smashed the back of my head into the ground. Finally, a guard's whistle blew and hands were tearing us apart. I tried to fight off whoever grabbed me, craving this fight, needing to show them she was mine, but the arms were too strong. 667 and 140 wrenched me back, caging my arms. When I looked to the two new champions, they were pulling their leader back. His brown eyes were locked on mine, and his face was filled with fury.
"Impressive," Master's voice called out from above as he clapped slowly.
My gaze shot to his. He was grinning in excitement as he watched us brawl. His eyes narrowed on mine.
901, it seems we may have found a fighter to rival you after all.
He then looked to the new champions and added,
or maybe all three could.
When he faced me again, he said,
you may be the champion in the pit, but that may be a limited title.
My eyes next found 152, who was watching me, tears filling her eyes. My stomach turned on seeing her look so upset. She appeared in distress. Her hand lifted toward her forehead, but she quickly dropped it back to her side. Her skin was still pale. She broke her gaze from mine and looked to the scarred male. She shook her head, then turned away. Master picked up 152's hand to link her arm back through his own. She went with him, and it took all I had not to run after her and ask her why she stared at the new male so much. A guard appeared at my back and pushed me with the nose of his gun. I reached down and picked up my kinjals. I headed for the tunnel, followed by 667 and 140. 140 pulled me around by my arm.
Don't do anything to fuck up your chances in the pit. You make it to the final, you get to take those fuckers down.
I wrenched my arm back, then pounded to my cell. I sat on my bed for hours until the guards arrived to tell us we could watch the opening fights from the observation cage. I left my cell. 140 and 667 walked beside me. I entered the cell that gave us a clear view of the pit. As I looked to the stands, every seat was full and money was changing hands. My lips curled in disgust.
Cocksuckers, every one of them.
140 hissed from beside me as the other fighters moved aside to let us to the front. 140 rested his hands on the bars, and we watched as Master moved to sit on his seat, guiding 152 to sit on the floor in front of him. My pulse raced at how beautiful she looked. Her hair was up on her head, and long, curled tendrils hung to the sides of her face. She was dressed in a shouldered white dress, and long earrings draped from her ears. I couldn't move my eyes from her as she sat looking sad and uncomfortable at Master's feet. She shouldn't be here. This shouldn't be her life. Low mutters came from behind us. When I turned around, the three new champions were cutting through the weaker fighters. My back bristled when they came to stand beside us. 667 and 140 closed in on me. They didn't need to. I had heard the scarred male just fine. He was right. I would destroy him in the pit. I focused back on the arena in front of me. This was my domain. They would be the ones to fall. Master stood to signal the guard for the match to begin. Two males ran out, their weapons held in front of them, a sword and a spear. It was a slow match, neither male gaining the upper hand. Eventually, the male with the spear caught a perfect shot to the other's heart. The mortally wounded male immediately fell to the sand. I would have slaughtered both in seconds. The remainder of the fights passed in a similar way, With every match, I was convinced that I would get to the final. As I glanced across to the three new males, I thought that most, if not all of them, would make it too. A strange, regretful feeling spread inside when I thought of the fact that 667 and 140 would not make it there. Talking to them over the past several weeks had not been bad. In fact, I found myself liking talking to the Warriors. They understood this life. They understood what 152 meant to me. With that thought, my attention drifted to where she sat. She wasn't watching the match. Her eyes were downcast, her thoughts elsewhere. I frowned, seeing the confused expression on her face. I wanted to ask her what was wrong. I wanted to press my lips to hers and make her smile. 152 suddenly flinched. I immediately knew why, when Master pressed his hand to the back of her neck. He wore a severe look on his face as another fight passed without much excitement. He was hurting her. He was pissed that his fighters were not making their kills exciting. 152 was bearing the brunt of his anger. A low curse came from my side. When I looked across the cage cell, the scarred Russian was watching Master holding 152 with obvious fury in his eyes. Unable to stand here and watch it, stand next to this ugly fucker gawking at my female, I turned and headed back to my cell. When I arrived, I sat on my bed and waited. I waited and waited for 152 to come to me. But as the night dragged on and the guards didn't arrive, I frowned. Footsteps sounded from outside, and I stood waiting for her to enter. But she didn't. Master stood in the hallway, alone. "Champions!" he called. We all walked to our cell doors. I saw 667 and 140 glaring. He met each of our eyes and said,
"Tomorrow you will face fighters that are no match to you, but as my champions, I expect you to give my crowd what they want."
"Where's my Mona?" 667 asked.
Master looked to his face.
"She won't be joining you tonight."
He next looked to me, and I noted the victory in his expression.
"None of them will."
Disappointment ripped through me, but I didn't let it show. 667's jaw clenched, and his hands tightened on the bars.
"Perform well tomorrow, and you will be rewarded her in return," Master said.
He left our quarters, and I moved back to my bed. I slumped down on the mattress, forcing myself to get some sleep. But all I could think of was 152. Of her metal bracelet that would inject her with drugs. Drugs that would make her need my release when I wasn't there to ease her pain. My eyes snapped open, and I made myself stay still. The anger was thick and hot as I thought of that prick taking her in his bed. Thought of her cries as he was brutal and raw. Possession burned bright in my mind. No matter how much I tried to sleep, very little came. But the embers of anger remained. They intensified and increased until they were all I was. I welcomed tomorrow's fight, a fight I would drag out as long as I could, because the reward would be worth it, just to have 152 in my bed once more. Even if it meant forfeiting my free will, even if it meant giving Master everything I had left.
"They're good,"
667 said as the scarred male walked away from the pit into the tunnel. We had been watching the long-haired Georgian and the scarred Russian. Both had slain their opponents within seconds of entering the ring. The Georgian had pierced his opponent in the eyes with his size. The scarred Russian had sliced his bakana through the skull of his. Neither had even broken a sweat. A guard arrived and pointed at 667. 667 took his weapons in hand and turned to go and wait in the tunnel. The tournament fights were a quick turnaround. No sooner had one match ended than another had begun. I had watched last night and the matches so far today. The crowd loved it, was bloodthirsty. But Master had sat stoically throughout. 152 remained at his feet, rarely looking up. I could tell Master wanted more from the fights. His teeth had been grinding together as the Georgian and the Russian easily defeated their opponents. Master wanted the theater. In his pit, it wasn't the death that he treasured. It was the fight to live. The crowd roared as a male jogged out into the pit. He had a closely shaved head and pale skin. His number read 289. He was big and carried a hammer as a weapon. But from the minute the blonde Russian champion, 818, ran out into the pit, you could see who was about to come out of this alive. The blonde's knuckle dusters were ready in his hands. He jogged forward, increasing his speed as he approached. The large male swung his hammer. But with perfect accuracy, the blonde laid three punches on his opponent. 818 ran past him, leaving his opponent in shock, but still on his feet. The male glanced down. I followed his gaze. The blonde Russian stood still, not even looking back. Suddenly, his opponent dropped to his knees. I saw that he had two blade punctures in his stomach and one right over his heart. On cue, he kneeled over and his heavy body thudded to the ground. Turning on his heel, the blonde ran out of the pit and straight into the tunnel. 140 sighed. When I looked to his face, he looked at me too. Shaking his head, he said, "They will test us in skill." I agreed. Master could get exactly what he wanted from this tournament. A new champion. And me. Dead. The guard appeared and signaled for 140 to wait in the tunnel. He left, and I held my kinjals tighter, knowing my turn was coming soon. The guard closed the door to the cell, and I watched the pit, waiting for 667 to come out. Movement from the back of the stands caught my attention. I narrowed my eyes, seeing 667's Mona in the arms of a guard. Just like 152 a few days ago, the guard had a knife to her throat. He was standing directly in front of the tunnel, directly in 667's sight as he ran out. I watched as the fighter ran to the pit, stumbling in his step when he circled the ring. He had seen her, seen his female in the guard's arms. His face contorted in rage as he glared at Master. Master barely reacted, but for a small smirk pulling on his mouth. I rocked on my feet in agitation. That fuck should not be able to get away with this. 152 looked up when 667 began grunting in anger, waiting for his opponent. She stared at the champion, then tracked his gaze to the back of the stands. I watched as her eyes widened and her mouth dropped in shock. Then, as I hoped she would, she looked to the cage that held me. I could see the plea in her eyes. She wanted me to do as Master demanded. She wanted me to live. The sound of feet running up the tunnel drew my attention. 667 held his daggers in hand and took the first blow of his opponent's spiked club. With his shoulder beaded by tens and tens of holes from the spikes, I knew he was doing as Master commanded. He was giving the people a show. I moved closer to the bars as 667 turned on the fighter. But just as he did, the fighter swung his club at 667's head. It happened almost in slow motion before my eyes. 667, instinctively defending himself from the blow, ducked
and struck out his daggers. Both long blades slipped like butter through the chest of his opponent. 667's face blanched as he turned to watch the male fall head first to the sand. The once excited crowd now groaned in disappointment. 667 turned his body to the stands just in time to see Master flick his wrist to the guards holding 667's Mona. A loud, pained roar left 667's mouth as the guard, with no time to lose, sliced his blade across 667's Mona's throat. Blood immediately burst free from the blonde female's neck, and her eyes widened in a mixture of fear and shock.
The guard threw her crumbling body to the ground, leaning down to wipe his blade on her quickly soiling dress. My attention fixed back on 667 just as he jerked forward, a war cry wailing from his mouth. With only one focus in his eyes, he leapt into the lower levels of the stands, slaying anyone in his path as he fought to reach Master's seat. The crowd began to rush from their seats when, from the tunnel, 140 came sprinting out, axes held high. He charged across the bloodied sand, jumping over the slain fighter's corpse. My heart thudded in excitement at seeing the spectators running for the exits, my brothers spilling blood as they raced toward Master. Needing to help them, wanting to join them in taking the fucker down, I began roaring out in frustration. I turned and slammed my shoulder against the cell door. It didn't move, and the guards ran past my metal prison, running toward the pit. Turning to face the bars showcasing the pit, I held them with my blades. "Get me out," I demanded, and looked up. When I did, fear wrapped around me. 667 was staggering, still rose from where Master sat, where he held 152 before him, like a shield. A gunshot sounded. I realized that 667 had already been shot and was fighting to stay alive. 140, however, was still charging toward Master, the guard's bullets missing his every move. "No!" I screamed, seeing Master holding 152 toward where 140 approached. I was wild as I charged against the bars, sparks flying as metal clashed against metal. I wanted to take Master down. I wanted to punish him for using my female as a shield and for slaying 667's Mona. 667 staggered to his feet, riddled with bullets. But just as he did, a guard moved behind him and sent a bullet straight through his head. 140 never heard the shot that came for him. He raised his weapon, ready to strike Master, when another guard fired a bullet into the back of his skull. 140's body stiffened as his skull splintered and his body collapsed on the rows of chairs beneath him. The cacophony of fearful voices and the crowd's screams were nothing compared to the roars pouring from my heart. The guards moved quickly, rounding up the crowd. Master's spectators were forced back toward their seats. The head guard appeared seconds later with a mass of cheery. He hit them with batons as he commanded them to retrieve the slain bodies and remove them from the ring. But my eyes stayed locked on Master as he released 152 to dust off his jacket like nothing had even happened. 152 was shaking, white and pallor, as she swayed faintly on the spot. Rushing down the middle of the pit, Master held up his hands as his guards raised their guns high and forced the shaken crowd to listen. When they did, Master spoke. "Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for that small accident." He forced a smile that I could see straight through and said, "This is the blood pit. It is a death ring. Occasionally, the fighters forget their place."
He tried to speak again, but I clanged my blades louder on the bars, pacing back and forth as I shouted to let me the fuck out. Master didn't look back at me. He continued talking, informing the crowd there'd be a slight break before the final match. Mine. Movement from behind me made me turn, and I saw several guards at the cell door.
Shut the hell up,
one snarled, but that only poured fuel on my fury. Clutching my blades, I charged the door. The guards jumped back, their guns held high. One of them held an unfamiliar gun toward my chest.